Okay, we're just coming up on 7:30, so I'm going to go ahead and mute all. As usual, everybody will have the ability to unmute themselves. Please feel free to do so if you have a comment or question, and remute yourself afterwards so we keep background noise to a minimum. Welcome all. We welcome guests if we have any with us tonight. We welcome guests at any time at any of our meetings. If you want to become a member, I paste it into the chat window. Where you can go on our website to join up. It's only $20 a year, but do feel free to continue as a guest. So tonight, later on this evening, the contents of the deck in PDF format, the audio track, and the contents of the chat window will go up on our website, courtesy of the hard work of Alan. And with that, we got quite a few things that are on the agenda tonight. So I'll pass it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. So welcome, everybody. And just a final note for the evening. The next unit, oh no, that's not right. You'll notice that this is normally the last slide in the evening, reminding you of the next Q&A session or the next meeting. But note here that we've added a new twist. Basically, we're looking at attribution for participants who provide questions, comments, or give presentations. And basically, Chris and I were having this discussion about whether we should attach names to people's questions and their answers. Certainly for answers, we like to give due attribution to people who provide the information. But the question really is, if we add people's names to slides, does it encourage people to participate? Or does it actually discourage some people because they'd rather remain anonymous? So we did a little survey a week or so ago on people who sent in things, and it turned out it was about a 50-50 split. Some people didn't have any problem with us using names, and other people indicated that they didn't want their names included. So what does everybody think? Send us an email and tell us what you're thinking on that issue is. If we include your name, does it encourage you to participate, or does it discourage you to participate? Anyway, our plan going forward is that we will use names unless people indicate that they want to remain anonymous. So we'll certainly make that known to everybody when we're asking for people to send us material. So there we go. That's the public service announcement for tonight. And talking about people's names, we haven't included one on this slide, but our first topic is a share, and you will know the name of the person because she's going to actually talk to her slides.
Okay, thanks, Alan. So I was just sort of interested in YouTube Health. I saw an article in the Medical Post recently. That's a Canadian newspaper sent mostly to physicians. And so it got me interested in it a little bit. So what YouTube Health is trying to do is have the credible sources come up, rise above, shall we say, sources that maybe are providing, you know, misinformation or not as credible. And so rather than just based on the number of views and things like that, they've gone an extra step to try and have the information that you see first come from authoritative and credible sources. They're also working with health organizations to develop new content, but also to remove content. I'm not sure how that part is done, but they expanded into Canada in December of 2022 to all licensed Canadian doctors, nurses, psychologists, and health organizations. And that's that they're hoped to get evidence-based authoritative sources and content to make it easily available to Canadians. Next. So basically they grant the Canadian organizations or individual physicians accreditation and access to their sort of health features. And as I say, they're working with them as well to develop original content. So they partnered with the Ottawa Hospital to develop videos, 36 videos in French and English. And the spokesperson for the Ottawa Hospital did indicate that there is a demand for information among their French audiences. And so they produced this article for YouTube in 2021 about diabetes. And it's had 780,000 views so far. So they say that 92% of all Canadians use YouTube to gather information and knowledge. I personally don't tend to use it for health information, but I certainly use it for all sorts of things. And I don't know why. I just tend to go to Google and go to the sites that I'm familiar with, like Mayo Clinic and things like that. But a lot of people do go to YouTube to watch videos on health. So this is their goal anyway. Okay, next. So this is the director in charge of YouTube Health right now, Dr. Garth Graham, and he basically believes that information is an actual determinant of health, and the video is a very effective format for getting that information out and helping people digest it and remember it. So overall, health content, YouTube, 99.5 million uploads, and health conditions in terms of views, 110 billion views, total global views, and 7 million uploads, and then mental health, 25 billion views and 3 million uploads. Next. Next.
Alan seems frozen.
Yeah,
oh, there he is. Okay.
Okay. So these are just some of the partners. Now, it kind of scrolls across the screen back and forth, so I just took a screenshot, so some of the logos are truncated a bit there. But you can see there's some big names, American Health Heart Association, the New England Journal of Medicine, Johns Hopkins, so very well-respected places. If you go to that website, health.youtube, that's not where you go to search on, you know, a question you may have. This is strictly information that's targeting the people that want to become credentialed with YouTube Health. So it's not really for the user, but you can go and check it out if you wish. Okay, next. There we go. So the criteria for health professionals, you have to be a licensed doctor, nurse, or mental health professional, and you have to attest to the WHO information sharing standards. Your YouTube channel has to have a minimum of 1,500 public watch hours in the last 12 months, or 1.5 million public short views in the last 90 days. And it has to be primarily focused on health information, so my dance videos don't count at all. It has to have no active community guideline strikes. The YouTube channel cannot be operated by a pharmaceutical company or a health insurer or somebody selling medical devices. And then you just click on a link to fill out a form to become part of their health professional experts. Okay, next. So that's basically it. They show you these little examples. So it's basically a content, highlights content from authorized channels and search results to help people identify credible sources when search for health topics. So it just, as they say, lets things rise to the top. Okay, next.
There's a question here from Carol. She says, are there no ads?
Well, it's there's no guarantee there won't be ads. I didn't click on a ton of them. It's like anything else you click on YouTube. It's possible, but I'm hoping no. I did click on a couple that didn't have ads, but it's hard to know when YouTube puts ads in. It doesn't seem to be a set pattern, but I could investigate that further. Next. So this is just an example. If you wanted to go to an actual YouTube channel of a New England Journal of Medicine group, say, and you got to know them, you got their podcast, the usual kind of thing. So, you know, anybody can go to a particular YouTube channel to find their health information. So that's just an example of that. Next. And this is what I did. So does it work? So what I did was a search for diabetes control, and these three popped up. And at first I was a little disappointed because I thought, oh, where are these well-known, Johns Hopkins, that kind of thing. And then I got to thinking, I thought, well, the lady at the bottom has 2.9 million views. And I thought, well, it's supposed to make sure she doesn't come to the doctor if she's not a doctor. But the first guy, it's not just the doctor, psychology, it says MD after his name. So if these are doctors that have become accredited with them, then that's great. So they have lots of views and they are actual licensed physicians. So this is what pops up. And I did different wording, and especially the woman, the doctor, the last doctor, she and the top doctor, Dr. Saunders, they both popped up quite frequently no matter what I searched for. Next.
Before we go on, Tom pointed out that the first one on the slide there, it actually says sponsored. So,
yes, and that's what scared me too, Tom. When I first Googled this and I saw sponsored, I thought, oh, this isn't really working too well. So I'm not sure, but I tend to ignore the sponsored, but if you can go back to that slide, Alan, oh, he's drinking his beer. That's not going to work.
Well, this one has a sponsored on it as well.
So this one has a sponsored one. Okay. So here, the first one's sponsored. So I tend to ignore those kind of ones. And I think I'm not sure it's working perfectly exactly as they wished. And that was exactly my reaction, Tom, was I didn't like the fact it said sponsored. So next slide.
It could be, though, that company has sponsored the production of this video.
It's possible that they've put in and they're an accredited company. It just gave me, I was just a little suspicious. And then this one, I Googled heart disease prevention, got a sponsored one popping up first, but the second one was Stanford Healthcare, so that's fine. I didn't have to scroll down. I've got Johns Hopkins on the bottom left. I've got the American Heart Association on the bottom right. So these all came up in my first screen. So that's pretty darn good because I can ignore the sponsored one if I want to. Okay, next. Sponsored
means that they paid to put that thing there. And they're probably, that was a publishing company, so they may have a book available at the end of it or something like that.
Yeah, and that wasn't the general idea that people pay to get on. But who knows what other stream they have. So YouTube Health, it wasn't supposed to be the sponsored people would trump. So this one, I was Googling on vaccination information. Ontario Medical Association popped up first, which is great because it's Canadian, right? And then we've got the University of Pretoria. We've got National Health Services in the UK. So I was really happy with that search too. So I think that might be the last slide.
Yep.
Yes. So basically, I want to keep an eye on this and see maybe next year as more Canadian physicians in that join. Clearly, if the Medical Post is putting out an article, then they're of the opinion that, that there could be more Canadian physicians that could join. But, of course, the Canadian physicians have to have a YouTube channel or be willing to make one or make the content as the Ottawa Hospital did. So just thought it was interesting.
Okay, thanks, Linda. I guess we're not going to complain about the sponsorship for the first item here because OMA seem to be sponsoring themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not even 100% what that sponsored means in every situation because I can't imagine. Well, it's possible the OMA pays, but I just, it seems odd to me.
And Natalie has a question. So what we see won't be triaged by location or country.
I don't think it is. I think it will pop up a Canadian one if it is if it has one. And if it has a lot of views, then probably it would get on the first page.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Linda. So if you didn't recognize the speaker, that's Linda Buskey. I didn't introduce her to start with, but I figured everybody knows Linda.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, moving along then. We have a share from Chris.
Alan, this is,
we have a question from KWG.
Go ahead, Karen.
Sorry, Alan, before you go on, just a question for, I think, the crew here. I've seen on certain issues that you often get these bot-type activities that increase the numbers and make something look more credible than maybe what it is. Is anybody more knowledgeable on that and can speak with how you tease those things out? Because the bots will raise the numbers to make it look like it's a more credible thing or had more hits or it's not even a real thing. And I've seen that there's been some promotional manipulation of information through that route. Can anybody speak to that?
Okay, we can revisit that at the end of the evening. If anybody comes up with some ideas on it, we can certainly revisit that. Okay, moving on. So Manifest Browser Note Taker. I found this, and it's kind of cool, actually. We all have a need to do ad hoc notes periodically, and we all use our browsers all day long. So this is a really neat method of keeping these ad hoc notes in the browser. It's free and open source. You access it just like any other website, just works within the browser. Notes that you make are automatically saved. There's no save button. Just as soon as you create them, they're actually saved. Everything gets saved locally. There's nothing that gets moved off of your computer to any other website or any other computers that you might own or anything like that. It is all kept local. One of the ways of doing this is if you wanted to make it really convenient, you could set it as your homepage for added convenience, or you could just have a bookmark to it. You could put it on your bookmark bar. The example I have here of the Google New Tab page, you can actually put an icon onto it that would go to Manifest and so forth. So there's a number of ways that you can actually access it to make it a little bit easier. Next. If you do want to set it as your homepage, I won't go into detail on all of these, but here's where you would go in probably the five biggest browsers out there if you wanted to set it so that Manifest was on your homepage. Next. So to use Manifest, all you have to do is you go to manifest.app. And if you have no notes that you've saved so far, you'll get this instruction note that will actually pop up automatically. If you delete all your notes the next time you go into Manifest, you will get this instruction note pop up. Next. So within the notes themselves, in the top left-hand corner is a minus sign, and you click on that to delete the note. Next. And then on the title bar, or what looks like a title bar, no text is ever in there, but there is a bar across the top, and you can click on that and drag it to move the note around on the screen. Next. In the bottom right-hand corner, you can resize it by clicking on that and dragging the bottom right corner anywhere you want to make it bigger or smaller or change its shape. Next. And the final thing, if you like dark or light mode, by default, it will use the operating system setting. So if you have dark mode turned on, it will come up in dark mode. But you can toggle this individually between light and dark mode with Alt and T while you're on that page. Next. So to actually use it, I deleted the original note that comes on there, the instruction note. And then basically what you do is you just click and drag a bounding box to create a grid of selected pixels, and when you release the mouse button next, it'll actually create a blank note wherever you dragged out. Next. And then all you have to do is click in the note and start editing your text. So here I just clicked in it, I typed in pick up milk, hit enter, typed in buy tickets, and that created that note. Next. Once you got a bunch of notes, you can create multiples on the screen, whatever will fit on the screen. If you have something that, like the Q&A topics there, where there's more information than will fit within the box that you defined, you'll automatically get a vertical scroll bar. They will wrap the lines automatically horizontally. Next. And just a couple of things that you have to watch out for in using it. It's a fairly simple app, and the person doesn't seem to be all that interested in enhancing it. The smallest note you can create is a 9x9 grid. Once you create one, you can actually shrink it down to about 8x8, I believe, but basically look at 9x9 as smallest, and you can't fit an awful lot of notes in 9x9, so you probably don't want to create things smaller than that. One of the tricky things is if you actually create a bunch of notes and then you reduce the size of your browser window, it doesn't move the notes into the visible area of the web page. So some of them maybe just become invisible. If that happens, you can either temporarily resize your browser window back to bigger, move the notes, and then resize it back down, or you could hit the control minus on the numeric keypad to zoom out until you can see all your notes, move them to where you want them, and then control plus to zoom back in, or control zero to go back to the 100% zoom. Next. So this is a really important thing. The notes are actually saved as a cookie in the browser. And if you are in the habit of clearing your cookies, you'll lose your notes. Now, I think most people probably don't clear their cookies. I never do. Cookies are not evil. But just realize that if you do clear cookies, this is not the app for you. Cookies don't get saved elsewhere. And cookies cannot easily be transferred to other devices or saved out or anything like that. So unless you're a wizard at it, I wouldn't even look to trying to preserve your notes if you're going to clear your cookies. Next. A couple of other things. There's no rich text, so you don't get bold, underlined, colored text, and so forth on there. As I said, they're saved as cookies, so there's no way to back up or transfer your notes. The developer on the GitHub website for the project 4.5 years ago said that he was thinking about adding the ability to back up or transfer notes. Given that it's 4.5 years ago, then I don't think we can expect it anytime soon. You can't actually scroll the window that you see to fit more than one screen's worth. So what you see in the browser window is the space that they have available to you, albeit you can zoom out, you know, or resize your browser window bigger to give yourself more space. And there was no response to a suggestion to add in that ability to scroll vertically or horizontally to include more notes on there. There is additional information that is available at the GitHub repository, and I believe I pasted in all of that. No, I didn't. So I will paste in all of the information on that. And so that's it. Very, very simple. I think it's really cool in that we're always in the browser, and there's lots of times when you just want to keep a little note for yourself. And because you're always in the browser, it's really easy to get to all your notes. And next week, I'm going to have a follow-up where I'll talk about how you can actually make your new tab window go to manifest. And it's a little bit tricky. Most of the browsers don't seem to want to allow you to customize the new tab experience, but I'll talk about that next week. That's all I have on that.
Okay. Okay. Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Chris. And next up, we have another share with no name attached, but Bob Harris is going to open up his microphone and his display window and talk to his slides.
Thank you, Alan. And thank you, Chris. I like that manifest. I need to make a note to see that one. Get that done. I get this right. Do you see something?
Yeah, we see your desktop.
Great. And should be full screen now, right?
No, we are seeing the presenter's view.
Okay. Darn. What happened there? And not it, right?
Presenter view.
Okay. Can we come back to me or what? I'll figure it out.
Well, if you just go to slideshow and set up slideshow.
Slideshow, set up, got it here, thank you.
And then do it as I turn off the use presenter view near the OK button.
I have presented
the OK button.
Hit OK?
No, go back into there.
Okay, yeah. Well, you see my screen, don't you? You see my screen, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, just good. You just take off the use presenter view near the OK button.
OK button. Oh,
yeah,
right there.
There you go. Now start your presentation and you will see it.
But OK, right?
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris. And F5?
Yep.
No luck. F5.
You can hit the slide screen, that button down to the bottom near the scroll, near the sizing down on the right. The one that looks like a screen. Go left. Go right one. There you go.
Yeah. And then F5?
We're not seeing anything. I think it's coming up on one of your virtual screens or something.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
You'll be sharing the wrong screen, Bob.
this is what I I'm sorry. Can we come, this will take me a little while. Can we come back to me by chance?
Sure, yeah.
I'm sorry, guys.
I can.
Stop my share.
No, I can't do it. Oh, Jesus.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so we should have finished with that slide right there. And the next item is one of mine. So I just thought it would be useful to just mention this major website outage in the last few days. Airlines were taken offline and hospitals couldn't access records and people couldn't take money out of banks and all kinds of things happened. And so if you weren't following it, the quick and dirty is as follows. It really only affected commercial enterprises that were running software called CrowdStrike, which is a kind of a security package which runs on all kinds of platforms, but the one that was affected were users of CrowdStrike under Windows. And what happened was CrowdStrike updated their software. So it wasn't a Microsoft Windows issue, it was CrowdStrike that did an update to their program. However, they released this channel file 291, which was a kind of a find the bad guys sensor type file. Which was a system file, and it had been flagged to Windows as being required for Windows to boot. And unfortunately, this was a corrupt file, and the kernel crashed and went into recovery mode, and we got this famous blue screen. Now, it wasn't a blue screen of death. It was a blue screen of recovery. Now, the kernel couldn't carry on, so it basically goes into this recovery mode. It was estimated that 8.5 million Windows machines were affected worldwide. And my suspicion is that most of those were terminals to servers. And the servers probably kept running because they were probably using Linux and Linux wasn't affected because that file was specific to Windows. But all the terminals were running Windows and they all went down. And when they crashed, they had to be brought up manually in safe mode so that the IT administrators could get rid of this rogue file and start things up normally. Now, if you want to have a lot more information than that, Jocelyn Dwyer put this message on the members only forum about this video produced by Dave Plummer. And Chris has talked about Dave Plummer before. He's an ex-Microsoft employee, a software engineer, and he often will do videos explaining the kind of the backdoor type things about Windows, how Windows actually works behind the scenes, as it were. So in this video, he tells you basically how these kernel drivers function and what bad things happen if they don't work as designed. And in particular, if they aren't tested before you put them to work, which I think was the problem here. So here's some PR material if you missed that video link from Jocelyn in the members only forum, it probably means that you're not in the members only forum. So just remind you that on the website, we have this Google Groups how-to page, tells you how to sign up for our various groups, and in particular, how to sign up for the member forum. However, the member forum is only available to paid up members. So if you're not a member, as Chris said, $20 a year will get you a membership, and there's the link to join the club. If you are a member, don't send us $20. You don't need to renew because there was no renewal fee this year. Membership renewals were free. And that got me thinking, this whole business, well, what happens if my computer doesn't boot? And Bob, I thought Bob was going to tell us by now how to use System Restore, so we'll see how to do that later on. And personally, I would drag out my my rescue disk for my disk imager and just reload a previous disk image and bring my system back to the way it was a week ago or a month ago or whatever. But another option is to use a boot disk. And this video talks about Hiron's Boot CD, which is a kind of recovery disk, which you can create a CD, or more likely these days, you would create a bootable USB drive. Now, Hiron's Boot CD has kind of had a bad reputation in the early days. This kind of, I think it was developed in the early 2000s, and it had a whole bunch of proprietary software on it, which of course was highly illegal, but people were using it anyway to try and recover their systems when they crashed. But in 2018, fans of the Boot CD basically completely rewrote it and used the Windows PE, the pre-installation environment, which is a kind of a stripped-down version of Windows, which is perfectly legal to use. A lot of the disk imaging programs will use either Windows PE or a Linux distro to create a bootable CD, so a bootable drive, so that you can recover your system using disk imaging. Well, this is the same kind of thing. It boots into this mini version of Windows, and then it has all kinds of stuff available to you. So one of the things it lets you do is access all of your disk drives on the computer. So if you want to just grab personal data files from some drive somewhere which is on your machine, if you can boot the machine with the Hiron's PE, then you have access to the drives, and you can pull those files down to a different medium. And it has a whole bunch of software, including multiple browsers. So it has copies of Chrome and Firefox and other browsers on board. It has diagnostics and tools for memory and hard drives, so you can check out those hardware items. And if you're concerned about possible viruses, then it has a number of antivirus programs where you can conduct offline scans, not offline, but offline scans. And then there's a whole raft of utilities and system tools, things like 7-zip or unzipping packages, the command prompt, cmd.exe, and Chris will be glad to know that they have the whole suite of the sysinternals programs available, and which are a bit of a handful, so you really probably have to know how to use some of these things before you can actually get to it. And there's a whole bunch of other things there as well. So I understand that's basically all I have on CrowdStrike and Hiron's Boot CD. I think Bob is now ready to go, so I'm happy to turn things over to Bob and let him share his screen.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. And I hope I get this right this time. It was lots of good stuff there. And I'm having troubles tonight here. That's the wrong one. Here, I got one more time here. Least square share. Must be here. Do you see that screen now?
We see your desktop again.
With the mouse and everything, right?
No, yep. we see PowerPoint.
Yeah, PowerPoint,
so
but
I
not
hit a
in
five.
Slideshow mode. We're getting presenter view again. You can carry on presenter view.
No, this won't work. But it won't work at all. Can we? Well, here. What do I change in here, Chris? Do you see anything right there? Do you see anything right there?
Well, it's saying use presenter view, but you turned that off last time, and it didn't help. So, it's actually go back into that again, just one more time to the setup slideshow. So it's slideshow monitor. So that's where the slideshow is coming up on.
It should be number four, the ghost monitor there. I've been on my desktop here.
Okay. Well, it's
hit the from beginning in the top left-hand corner.
Yeah, or hit the one right in the middle of your – hit OK first. Hit OK. And then click on your – click on the one right in – yeah, right in the center of your screen, not just on the – like sometimes I find I have to click on the one that's showing.
From beginning. Yeah, try that.
And then F5?
Well, no, that should that's coming up on your monitor 4 or whatever that is, which
but you're
we're not
sharing
seeing.
Monitor 4, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Wait.
Try
monitor
stopping
four.
Share
oh,
and
wait.
Then reshare using monitor 4.
Four. Is that it now? I'm sharing the wrong screen.
Yeah, got it.
I'm sharing the wrong screen. Oh,
no,
geez,
we're fine now.
Thank you, folks, for your help. Very good. You see the screen now? I don't see presenter view here. Oh, wait. There. I'm not going to work tonight. It's not working here at all, I suppose. I'm sorry.
Working at this end, Bob. We see your slides perfectly.
You see it from there.
Navigating PC slowdown, my recent encounter in slideshow mode.
Now go back to your PowerPoint screen and click Use Presenter View, and then start the screen again. Start the slideshow.
F5. It's not working.
Turn Presenter View on again.
If you try and advance your slides from what we're seeing, it doesn't go to the next slide?
Do you see the next slide there now?
No.
No, just the first one.
No, it's not going. I'm sorry, folks.
How about if I drive the slides and you read your notes on your own machine?
Sure, thank you, Alan. That'd be great. Sure, thank you. I hope that'd be work here. I've lost. Okay.
I don't know where I am, so I have to
thank
go
you.
Back.
Wow.
You can jump to slide. 22. Oh, there you go. Okay.
This may not work.
Okay, Bob, you're up. Just tell them when you want to advance.
Okay. Okay, today I'd like to share. A problem with my Windows PC, which I'm having right now. Something had changed before. And, last week it became very slow. And next slide, please. So this is more about sharing, and it's not considered an instructional guide. It's just how I handled things. I'm certainly not an expert, as you know. And could you go one ahead, please, Alan?
Yep.
One ahead again, please. Those slides are in the wrong order. I might have a rough day today. Okay, this is an overview of the computer we're working with here. It's a four-year-old computer. Dell, I've got a large 500 SSD drive for Windows, a 1 terabyte for the data, and they're The data drive's fairly full. The Windows is about two-thirds. So go back one slide, please, Ellen. Those two in the wrong order. So last week on Tuesday, I realized my Windows PC was running a little slow. Actually, very slow. Sometimes I'd open a large program. I'd even open the program twice. And this happened last Tuesday. And I'd open the same program twice because it wasn't opening. And I use GreenShot a lot. I use it incessantly. I've used it for years. It's really light, quick, and snappy. It was painfully sluggish. Something was terribly wrong. So next slide, please, Ellen. There we go. Thank you very much, up in two. I tried a few reboots, and I even opened Task Manager. But it really wasn't to do anything else beyond that. So I tried to forget it. Next slide, please. So about 2 days later, on Thursday, I realized this was intolerable. It wasn't getting any worse, but it certainly wasn't getting any better. So I tried another reboot, and I knew I had to do something. Next slide, please. Again, on Thursday morning, I tried some more reboots, no luck. I did, again, open Task Manager, but that's all I could do. So it really didn't help anything. Next slide, please. And this is Task Manager. There's mountains and valleys in there. I can sometimes see the mountains and valleys if I turn the program on, but I can't go backwards and see where that was or attribute the high rises to whatever it is. I'm pretty inefficient at Task Manager. I need to learn more. And next slide, please. Since we're on Task Manager, all I can do with it is open it. There are many ways to open Task Manager. You can right-click on your empty area of your taskbar. A menu pops up and select Task Manager. I like to use Control-Shift-Escape. I do use Task Manager often. It's in my golf program for maximizing screens. But Control-Shift-Escape on the left side of your keyboard will open it instantly. But my knowledge stops right there. So anyway, I wasn't getting any, back to our topic here, I wasn't getting any progress here. I needed to try something. And I have used this before, System Restore. System Restore picks your computer back to a previous date and setting, but it won't affect your work files. So I do use Restore Points. And so next slide, please. And I found a date in my system there in the restore system. Sorry, you can search for System Restore by going to your Start menu and search for your type the words in Restore or Recovery. So if you want to find System Restore on your Windows PC, use your Start menu and then go to Recovery or search in those keywords. So next slide, thank you. I was able to find a date about 1 week old, and I was able to check that the last Windows update. I realized going back 1 week was before this update, so I knew going back would have to update my Windows update again, and I was certainly willing to do that. So after I completed the restore, I'd have to update Windows again. And so I moved with the update, the restore, went forward on this, and it took a little while. So I left the computer work alone by itself, and I came back to it a short time later. I booted it up once or twice as advised when I came back to it, hit a few functions, and it worked fantastically. And next slide, please. It worked perfectly. It was all restored. And this is about the end. Next slide. In this instance, I'd like to say that I wasn't very smart. I could not use Task Manager. I couldn't know what it was telling me. I'm a little bit sheepish about that. I'm not very handy at these things, as you already realize. But I'd be interested to know how other people would handle these things. And what do you do when your PC gets slow? And that's how I handled it. I was lucky and it worked. And thank you, Ellen. And thank you for the help, Chris, too.
Thanks, Bob. I don't think Task Manager is the easiest program to figure out what it's trying to tell you. I certainly do look at it if things slow down and try to see if the CPU is running at 100% or memory's full or the disk is just thrashing but like you, once I see the graphs, I'm not really very handy at figuring out what specifically is causing the problem. But Chris had a presentation on speeding up your computer, or at least stopping it, finding the bottleneck which was making it run slowly. So I highly recommend checking on that for anybody who needs to.
I've pasted that into the chat. It's the Windows Performance Tune-Up presentation that I give periodically. I've given it 18 times at the Ottawa Public Library, and I did give it back in 2018 as part of the general meeting of the PC User Group in March. And so I pasted the link to that PDF. The information on the task manager is pretty much static in there. I haven't really changed much in there at all. So if you're interested in being able to interpret a little bit more about Task Manager, take a look at that deck. Or come out to one of the new presentations at the Ottawa Public Library whenever it's given.
Thank you both. Good advice.
And Alan, if you jump to 43, slide 43, I think we'll be on to the next item.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yes.
All right. Yeah. Bob, to answer your question, personally, I would run the antivirus and the anti-spyware, maybe the online ones if my machine is sluggish, and run. I don't use CCleaner anymore. I use Kerish Doctor, and I would run that to see if it finds anything that can be cleaned. And there are tools in there that I've never used, but there are tools in there for these to look for specific things as well. So that's what I would do. antivirus, anti-spyware first.
Yeah. So thanks, Eric.
Yeah.
Okay, just moving on. We got a couple of items, just two items left on the agenda tonight, so we should be able to get through them. I apologize if this is boring for anybody. I do have a call to action at the end of my slides, so bear with me through my update. So I have talked a couple of times about my experiences with Rogers over the last few years, and specifically about their pricing and some of the bonuses they will give as loyalty bonuses. So a recap, in early 2020, I was actually getting services from three different suppliers. This is outside of cell phone, which is completely separate. So I was getting Bell phone service on the landline, TechSavvy for cable internet, which actually is using Rogers infrastructure on that. And I was using Rogers as cable TV, and I've been using them for over 35 years for that particular thing. So in the summer of 2020, I switched all three of those services to Rogers Ignite, and I've had some interesting experiences with Rogers ever since then. Next. So recap on the prices. These are all the prices are taxes in, and so I was spending $61.12, outrageous amount for Bell Home Phone. Tech Savvy Internet, I was spending $56.44 for 30 megabit per second download. I forget what I was getting upload. It might have been 10 or 15. And then on Rogers Cable TV, I was getting their basic TV package, $54.44, which included a DVR. So my monthly bill was $172. Next. When I switched them all over to Rogers Ignite, basically, I got a home phone with Canada-wide calling, which I wasn't getting long distance with Bell at all. My internet went from 30 megabit per second to 150 megabit per second, and then I had TV with cloud PVR, and that's not to be discounted either. Cloud PVR can be really, really nice. When the derecho hit a couple of years ago, my cloud PVR kept on taping all of my shows that I had set up for weekly taping or daily taping, even though I was without power. So that was kind of nice. And what they did was they gave me a $25 a month loyalty bonus, which was only good for a year, and my monthly bill dropped from $172 to $118.64. Next. a year later, when the bonus was about to go away, I called them up, and they said, oh, we can't give you a $25 a month loyalty bonus anymore. What we can give you is a $30 a month loyalty bonus. So I said, oh, okay, thank you. I'll take that. And so basically my services stayed the same. Monthly bill dropped to $112.99. Next. So it was good for 1 year again. So August 2022, I called them again. And they had taken away Canada-wide calling. Didn't really break my heart because I have Canada-wide calling on my cell phone. But the loyalty bonus increased to $55 a month for a two-year period. So my monthly bill dropped again to $96.04. Well, 2 years has gone by, so it was time to call up Rogers again. Next. So I called them, and they have had big price increases as their base price. Now, basically, they were going to give me the same services. I told them I was perfectly happy with the services I got. I didn't want increased services at all. They did say that Flex 5 was going to go to Flex 10, which is just a series of TV stations that you can modify, choose from amongst a package and so forth. The loyalty bonus actually increased to $80 a month, and it was for 2 years. And my monthly bill stayed the same. So that tells you a little bit about the fact that the price actually went up. When we had loyalty bonus of $55 a month, loyalty bonus went up to $80 a month, and my bill stayed the same. Next. So the takeaways from this, bundling services with one provider can certainly save you a lot of money. So if you are with multiple suppliers, consider that, because they will give you bonuses for having more than one service. If you are a long-term customer, always ask to speak to the loyalty department. Now, it seems that Rogers, they used to have a dedicated loyalty department, and you used to have to argue with the frontline people to get access to it, but eventually they would put you through to it. Well, it seems like no longer have a dedicated loyalty department. So if you ask for it, they just say, well, this is the retention department or whatever. So I think it's worth asking for it anyways. Basically, it lets them know that you're expecting some special treatment. I advise always be polite. Don't complain about it. Basically, if you're happy with the service, say you're happy with the service. If you're wanting to stay with them, tell them. You're not looking to switch suppliers. You're not threatening to leave and go to somebody else. But you want a price break. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to ask for. Next. And final sort of thing on this is that, or not quite final, if you don't get the price you like, call back. So I first called this summer on the 4th of July, and the best offer I could get out of that person was a $10 a month increase for the same services that I have now. Now, that's not too bad. After a couple of years, you sort of expect some price increases, but I told them that, okay, well, I'll have to think about it. So I called back on the 22nd, so 2 days ago, and it turned out I got my price stayed the same for the same service, except I went from the Flex 5 to Flex 10, so I got a very slight increase in the service, but my price stayed the same, and that's the main thing that I was actually looking for. Next. And the final thing on there, base price is really going up. So if the loyalty bonuses actually go away, right now I'm getting $80 a month loyalty bonus, if that bonus goes away, I'm in for a major price hike. So it's going to go to $165 a month plus tax, so $186.45 would be what my bill is if I don't have loyalty bonuses. For now, I'm getting really good savings. I'm saving $90.41 a month, or over the two-year agreement, I'm going to save $2,169.84, which is really, really nice, but I'm waiting for that other shoe to fall, and all of a sudden them to say, well, we're not going to give you loyalty bonuses anymore. And at that point, I'll have to decide what I want to do. Until then, I'm saving a lot of money. So that's it. Next. So a call to action. This is a service that I've used, and I think that people should know about this and how I think you should go about trying to get better prices out of carrier suppliers. But do other people out there have a product or a service that you think other people should know about? Either something that is exceptionally good, or did you get exceptionally bad service that you want to warn people about? And you, too, can do a share to pass on this information to your fellow members so that they can be forearmed. So just send it into suggestionbox@opcug.ca, and we'll be happy to slot in some time for you.
So there were a couple of comments about that, Chris. Tom says he got a bell message saying that his $50 a 1.5 gig service, the price is being continued rather than being ended. And Carol says, with Bell, they don't credit you even if you want to get rid of the landline. And Natalie says she always negotiates, got an offer from Bell for a cell plan that was better than the current Rogers plan. And didn't want to switch, so called Rogers, asked the loyalty department, said she wanted to stay. Could they match the offer? And they gave her an even better deal, so she didn't have to switch.
Yeah. I find for the most part, Rogers is the one that I have the most experience with, and they tend to be really good. They do end up bending over backwards to try and make sure that they give you a deal that will keep you with them. And that's the aim. I find that in my negotiations with Bell, the few times that I've had experience with that, it's been less successful. But I'm not saying that there was no success. I managed to negotiate a little bit of a reduction in one person's bill by 20 or 30 bucks a month or something like that. And even that's nothing to sneeze at over the period of a year or two to get 20 or 30 bucks a month.
Okay, somebody's telling me there's a hand up, so Karen, go ahead, please.
Hey, everybody. Chris, while you're talking about Rogers, I just wanted to relay to everybody a situation that I had. I'm the power of attorney for my mother. My mother's had Rogers for a very long time. Two things I wanted to pass on. She had a Rogers email account, and I was looking to close down her Rogers services. I was made aware, in case others aren't aware of this, that if you do have a Rogers email, like our, let's say I was KW at Rogers.com. If you don't have a Rogers account, that email will go away. So then you have to do something before you shut down the account. In trying to deal with my mother's situation, Rogers made all kinds of, they got a lot of new staff. Lots of them don't know the system really well, which is very complicated. So I ended up in a runabout situation for 2.5 months trying to close down my mother's services and migrate my mother's email over to my Rogers account. Because I was having such difficulty and they made so many faux pas that caused me so much more time related to this project, I ended up doing something that I have used in the past, which is writing to the office of the president. And that's been incredibly helpful because then I can get all kinds of action. I only pull it out when I absolutely have to. But in case people don't know about it, office of the president is incredibly helpful to get your issues resolved with Rogers if you're being unsuccessful with their department. They do have a small loyalty team now that, in fact, after I canceled all of my mother's services, I got a call from the loyalty team trying to invite me back. Out of that, once he heard my story, he ended up giving me, on my own personal Rogers, a bonus to try and compensate me for my mother's situation. So a few pointers and tips to add to Chris's shares about Rogers.
That's great, Karen. Thanks. Yeah.
Tom says that he once had the email account president@rogers.com. Not sure how you get that.
I'm not sure I'd want it.
And now he's got VPIT, Vice President of IT, I guess, at bell.ca. Serge Eric says Bell always had a good deal on Black Friday. That's when he goes to renew. Maybe Rogers does the same kind of thing. And I think that's it. Okay, so we're right on 7:30. I'm afraid we're going to have to skip Tom's
U-Matrix presentation.
I think Alan is frozen.
Topic until next week, so that gives us a good start for next week. What happened? Oh, God. We lost me again?
No, you're there, but you typed in the 49 into the chat as opposed to your slide deck.
Okay. Oh, it's comedy of errors tonight, isn't it? Okay. I wanted to get to that slide. So I'll just remind everyone that our next Q&A will be next Wednesday, July 31st. Now, we had a lot of topics tonight with pleas for more information. So if you have any more information or you want to give a mini presentation, or if you have questions about anything computer related, send us a note to the suggestion box. And just remember that we will be sharing people's names unless you say that you don't want us to do that. And Tim says we should blame all of tonight's problems on the weather. And
that, I think no. I think we should blame it all on CrowdStrike.
Yeah, even better, right? CrowdStrike, right? Okay, so I hope everybody did enjoy the presentation we had tonight. Thanks to everybody who took the time to put things together and send us the information for next week, and we'll see you then.
Thanks, folks. We'll start off with the presentation that we had on for tonight with Tom on U-Matrix. So we'll have that pushed next week and all kinds of new stuff, hopefully. So we'll see you then.